Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com. All right, I am now joined by Gito Llewellyn, who you can find on Twitter at Gito Llewellyn. He also works over at the Jackcast. We are here to talk to him about Wales, although we very much miss him talking about Swansea, so we may slide a little bit of that in at the back end of this episode. But Gito, we'll start off with the beginning of this international break. Started off very promisingly with a huge win against Ireland. What was your view of that match?
It was probably Wales' best performance since the Euros back in 2016, which says a lot, really. Nobody was quite sure what to expect. There were a lot of changes to the squad, a very young squad, and they went out there and absolutely demolished Ireland. It is worth noting before we get started that Ireland were missing a lot of their best players and were awful, absolutely dreadful. Probably the worst I've seen Ireland in many, many years. And the thing when you're playing against Ireland is the longer you go without scoring, the more it suits Ireland. They are very, very happy with the score at 0-0. That suits them just fine. If they're frustrating the opposition, then they're happy. And we took the lead after about 5 minutes through one of four very, very, very pretty goals on the night. Some lovely passing in the build-up, and then Joe Allen sliding the most perfectly weighted through ball for Tom Lawrence to blast into the net. And then quickly after that, Gareth Bale did what Gareth Bale always does and just finds the back of the net. Amazing diagonal pass by Ben Davis. Some of the sexiest chest control you've ever seen in your life from Bale, and then blasted it into the top corner. And then before halftime, it was 3-0. Ethan Ampadu, who was sensational in that game, winning the ball back in midfield, passing it into Ramsey, who slotted into the bottom corner. So it was 3-0 at halftime. And some of the football, it was so attacking, it was so positive, passing the ball brilliantly, creatively, playing with pace. Everything that you would want to see in the performance, it was there. And another really, really nice goal by Conor Roberts on his competitive debut in the second half, made it 4-0. Ireland did get one back just purely because Aaron Ramsey kind of decided to stop playing on the edge of his own area and gave the ball away to Sean Williams. But, that was never going to be anything more than a consolation goal for Ireland. Wales were really, really good. For such a young squad to play that kind of football was very, very exciting. And it was a shame that only about 25,000 people were there to witness it. But it was the kind of performance which will get more people there in future.
Yeah, we'll touch on the youth a bit later because you mentioned them a few times there. Obviously, always good to see young talent coming through for the national team. Unfortunately, followed that up with a loss to Denmark. But there was a lot of drama heading into that one because of Denmark's strike against their FA and whether or not they would actually play for them. What did you think about that whole situation heading in?
It was so weird. I always think of the Danes as such logical and sensible people. And suddenly, like a couple of days before an international break, the players are all on strike and the Football Federation is refusing to compromise with them. The coach is off on holiday somewhere. It was just crazy. It just wasn't what you'd expect from the Danes, really. Is that, you may expect that from a crazy country like France, where sport is just all over the place and you never know what to expect from them. But the Danes are meant to be above that kind of thing. They're meant to be intelligent people and very, you know, measured and professional about their work. And they really were not in any way. But weirdly, I think it worked out in their favor, because this bizarre cluster of semi-professional and futsal players went out to Slovakia for a friendly, actually did okay on the whole, considering, you know, the fact that they'd never played before, that they weren't full-time professional footballers. They actually didn't play too badly against Slovakia, despite losing 3-0. But the fact that they went out there meant that the senior players, the Ericssons and the Scherners and the Delaneys and the Schmeichels and Schers of this world, they were totally fresh going into Sunday's match, whereas Wales had played just a couple of days before and, you know, travelled all the way over to Denmark for the match. So whereas before the match, I was thinking, oh, even if, you know, the first team players decide to end their strike and play for the national side again, they're still, you know, they still won't have had any time together. They won't have had much training. But in actual fact, they were really, really fresh. Very energetic for the game, and it ended up making a big difference, as anybody who watched the game will have seen.
Yeah, and it seems that Christian Eriksen continued his personal vendetta against you in particular and the country of Wales on the whole.
Yes, Christian Eriksen, for such a nice guy, is among my most hated footballers. He has now played 11 games against Swansea and Wales in his career, and he scored 10 goals in those 11 games, which is just insane. I mean, I haven't had time to look at his like larger scoring record, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't usually score at a rate of one per match or close to that. He's also got 6 assists in those matches. We all know Eriksen's a very, very, very good footballer. He is a classy, classy attacking midfielder. But his goal-scoring record and his assist record against Swansea, first of all, and now against Wales, is just it is offensively good. It is insane.
I would personally like to apologize for him.
I accept your apology. he is a big reason why Spurs were the only ever-present team that the whole time that we were in the Premier League who we did not beat. Eriksen is just a brilliant footballer, and he was the difference between Wales and Denmark. Wales started the game pretty well, and it was pretty even up until Denmark took the lead after about half an hour with Eriksen got space in the box and turned and finished it beautifully, coming in, bouncing in off the post. Really nicely taken goal, and it knocked Wales. I think over the last few years, Wales have had a real problem when we have gone behind. I think after the Euros, teams worked out that as long as you do not give us any space, then you've really nullified a lot of our problems. We really struggle when teams park the bus or when they close down any kind of space. The great thing about the Ireland game a couple of days earlier was that Ireland gave us acres and acres of space all over the pitch, and we could just run into that space at pace, you know. And we do have a number of speedy players, but a lot of them do depend on having that space to run into, and it just wasn't there as soon as Denmark took the lead. And the less space they got, the fewer chances Wales got. I think maybe slightly because the team had so many youngsters in it, but in fairness to, you know, the senior players weren't at their best, the likes of Ramsey and Bale. The team got a bit panicky, tried kind of Hail Mary stuff, trying to hit the ball long instead of playing the kind of passing football we saw against Ireland. I think just they just lost their heads a little bit and lost their structure, and it just played into Denmark's hands. And they got the penalty in the second half, which some people thought was a harsh call. I personally think it was a handball by Ampadu. It was one of those where, yes, it's a close range, but Ampadu's arm is out. And if your arm is out in that kind of position, then it's going to be given as a handball. Of course, Eriksen stepped up and slammed the ball into the back of the net. And as soon as it went 2-0, that was it. Then it was game over. And Denmark were fully deserving of the win. They were significantly better than Wales, and they deserved their place at the top of the group. Ryan Giggs described it as a learning curve for Wales. And I think it was. I think a lot of the youngsters had a bit of a tough time adapting to the different kind of game against better players in Denmark. It wasn't an awful performance by any means, but we were definitely second best in that match, no doubt about it.
Yeah, touching on those young, talented players, as you mentioned, Roberts and Lawrence both score in the first one. Ampadu, as you mentioned, had a very good match in that one, played in the second one as well. So it does seem like there's a lot of young blood coming through in the Welsh national side. Which players should we really be keeping an eye on, and which ones do you think are a little bit more of a flash in the pan?
There are so many good young kids coming through at the moment. It's a real transitional period in Welsh football. I think there was a little bit of criticism in the World Cup qualification campaign that Chris Coleman was maybe too loyal to the players from Euro 2016. Some of them were past their best. Some of them were off form, but they were still getting a place in the team, when probably he should have been looking to the younger generation for some fresh blood. But we've got some absolutely fantastic players coming through. I think Ethan Ampadu is the standout player. The fact that he's 17 is astonishing. He, against Ireland, was probably the best player on the pitch. I cannot remember him misplacing a pass all game, and that included some stunning long diagonals as well as some brilliant through balls. He is so confident on the ball. He is able to do the defensive work too. His positional sense is very good. He is clearly a very intelligent footballer. He can play at centre back or in midfield. We're trying not to overhype him, but realistically speaking, he does have the ability to be an absolutely world-class player. It's a bit of a shame, really, that he's at the same club as N'Golo Kanté, because he's got his minutes at Chelsea are going to be limited as a result of that. But I think at any other Premier League club, he'd be getting more minutes. He is a sensational talent, and he can only get better over the coming years. And I just cannot wait to see, if he's like this at 17, I cannot wait to see what he's like in 3 or 4 years' time. He has a potential to be an absolute world beater. But he's not the only one. David Brooks had a very good game against Ireland. He's had a great start to life in the Premier League with Bournemouth. A really exciting winger. Great feet, got plenty of speed. Perhaps needs to find an end product a bit more, but again, he's still very young and still got plenty of development ahead of him. Conor Roberts is a little bit older, but has had a taste of Premier League football last season and did reasonably well in the Championship. Now he's flourishing and has probably been Swansea's best player so far, and did very well against Ireland the other day. And then you've got Mepham at Brentford. A young centre-back, to be starting in the Championship as a 20-year-old centre-back, that's a heck of an achievement. And people at Brentford are speaking extremely highly of him. He's already attracting a lot of attention from the Premier League. Didn't have a very good game against Denmark, it has to be said, but he is only 20. He is still learning. You've got the likes of Ben Woodburn, who came on against Denmark. Hasn't really had the best of starts to life at Sheffield United on loan. But he's so young and he's got so much talent, and we know that he's got a bright future ahead of him. Tom Lawrence isn't very old, even though he's been around for a very long time, and he's flourishing at Derby. Harry Wilson's at Derby as well. Hasn't had much football over the international break, but he's really starting to find his feet in the senior game. And a couple of players made their debuts over the international break. Matty Smith, who's on loan from Man City at Twente. Tyler Roberts, who can't get a game at Leeds, but he's been touted for greatness since he was in the at schoolboy level, has really looked a cut above everybody else at his age level. I mean, at the moment, there are a lot of players coming through who you're thinking, wow, they are, you know, they are destined for greatness. But we should remember that we have had quite a few golden generations over the last few years. And whilst a lot of them have gone on to be fantastic, like Ramsey and Bale and the likes, you know, there are the likes of George Williams, who was expected to be fantastic and amazingly was in the Euro 2016 squad, but is now playing at Forest Green Rovers. Simon Church, believe it or not, was expected to be a brilliant striker, but has been anything but that. Now retired. So, you know, it's a wait and see job, but there's no doubt that the absolute diamond among this crop is Ethan Ampadu. He is just an incredible talent. And even now, he would start for most Premier League teams at the age of 17. And he would actually be the best midfielder in most midfields age 17. It's just that he's playing for Chelsea. He's still got some, you know, development to go. But I'll be honest, I've not seen many 17-year-old central midfielders who have looked as comfortable whenever he plays, actually, as he does. He is so exciting.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Another at one point exciting central midfielder was Johnny Williams, aka Johnny Esta. Does it feel like the train has passed on him a bit?
Yeah, I mean there are a couple of kind of the old stages who were always members of the squad who've just kind of disappeared over recent years. I mean, Johnny Williams was a phenomenally talented footballer, but I think injuries more than anything else have really curtailed his development. I can't believe he's still at Crystal Palace. He went on loan to Sunderland last season, and again, the injuries just didn't help him at all, but he didn't have much of an impact there. He's stopped. I mean, he was getting brought on as an impact sub for Wales for many years, but that impact's just died down over the years. And yeah, he's going to have to do something quite drastic to get back into this side now that it's got so many great youngsters playing in his position. And you know, same thing goes for Neil Taylor. There were three left backs in the squad for the recent games, and Neil Taylor wasn't one of them. And that one, you know, a player who was a stalwart of that great Euro 2016 team. He'd had some tough years even before that Euro 2016 campaign, but since then it's been a total disaster for him. Chris Gunter was dropped for the first time in absolute years for that Ireland game. I think he'd had 63 consecutive starts for Wales before the Ireland game, and he didn't get a place in the team. Ashley Williams, you get the feeling his career is starting to come to an end. Hal Robson-Cano, he's just 29, has retired. We're not sure if that was because he felt he was going to lose his place or not. I'm not sure. Interestingly, Sam Vokes, who always comes on, did not come on at all over the two games. So there is a feeling that there's a real changing of the guard in Welsh football. We've still got, I think, most of the stars of that Euro 2016 team have still got a few years ahead of them, the likes of Bale, Ramsey, Joe Allen, James Chester, Ben Davis. You know, these players have still got a couple of years ahead of them at their peak. But we've got this young crop now. I think the trick over the coming years will be trying to integrate them into the team and trying to get a winning team whilst developing all these youngsters who are coming through the system.
Yeah, it sounds like very promising times ahead indeed for Wales there. Getting back to those matches, they're obviously part of this UEFA Nations League, which Harry Maguire and many other people apparently do not fully understand. What have you thought of it thus far now that you've participated in two of the matches? And do you think it was the right choice to get rid of all those friendlies?
Yes, I think people are tired of international friendlies. They were pretty pointless games. I mean, Wales went years without playing any friendlies, and it had a brilliant impact on our FIFA ranking, actually. I like the idea of the Nations League. I still don't quite fully understand it. It's a very complicated system, but it brings another element of competitive football to the international game. It gives teams another chance at a qualification for the Euros. I mean, one criticism, it does have its criticisms already. I think the top tier of the Group A, League A or Group A, whatever you call it, League A, I think, between all the top sides, it's looked a little bit boring so far. I think that's fair to say. I don't think the games have been particularly memorable or high scoring, and I don't think there is as much at risk for those teams as perhaps for the teams further down the groups. I think that, you know, all the teams in that top group would expect to qualify for the Euros anyway, whereas, you know, if you're in the second, third, or definitely the fourth leagues, it's your best chance of qualification. There's no doubt about that. And teams that, you know, would previously struggle to get players up for friendlies, suddenly these are actually their biggest matches. If you're talking to Kosovo, Azerbaijan, Georgia, these kind of countries which, you know, they're trying to build the game, but it's such a struggle because they're always ranked so lowly in their qualification campaigns. This is undoubtedly their best chance to qualify for a major tournament. They should be taking this so seriously. And there could be a lot of interesting games, actually, in the bottom league between, you know, we're not talking about your San Marinos and your Andorras, even though Andorra have done, I think they've kept four clean sheets in a row now, which is unbelievable. Mm. You know, those teams suddenly have a chance at qualification for the first time in their history. And that's going to be fascinating to watch, too.
Yeah, I think people were very tired of friendlies, as you say, and in the U.S. we're still dealing with them. But hopefully there is some kind of development from this around the world. We promised a little bit of Swansea action at the Open, and so we're going to fulfill that now. Obviously, you were on the Premier League show for 4 or 5 years, so there are plenty of people, I'm sure, who are wondering both how you are doing personally and also how your beloved Swansea are doing. Seems like there's a lot of off-the-field mess, much like Tottenham at the moment. But on the field, things seem to be going fairly well.
Yeah, if you ignore the way the club is being run, it's a fantastic season. I think the Swans have had a brilliant start to the season, all things considered. I know when teams get relegated from the Premier League, they're expected to kind of challenge to go straight back up. But we know that it is a difficult transition. And for Swansea, it was particularly difficult. Interviews with the owners of the last few days have just proved that we gambled to a large extent on Premier League safety. A lot of the finances of the club were tied up with Premier League money. Now that that is gone, they've had to just sell at an alarming rate. Many players going on the cheap. Many of those players we couldn't actually sell, so we had to loan out on ridiculous conditions. And we've not been able to bring many players in. It's been a shambles of a summer. It really has. But the end product is that we've got an absurdly young squad full of teenagers and players in their early 20s and a completely untested manager. But together, they are doing a fantastic job. Graham Potter's working miracles at the moment. He's had a shocking summer transfer-wise to deal with. He adopted a team which had just totally forgotten how to play football and were really stinking of losing after years of struggle in the Premier League. it was always going to be a challenge to turn things around. And I think he really has started doing that. It's far from the end product, but going into the international break, the Swans were 6 in the league. They've only lost one game, and some of the football has been really, really encouraging. We're back to seeing fast-paced, passing, attacking football at the Liberty. And do you know what? That, you know, whatever happens in the league this season, if we see that, then fans are going to be happy. We've got players now. Last year, I came on the pod and said several times how I had no affection for the players. I really had no love for our players at all. Even when we were doing reasonably well under Carlos Carvajal, I really didn't like our players, which is a horrible position to be in when you're a fan. Fast forward to now, and it's a completely different situation. These are players, young players, who are really hungry to make their mark and impress, and they are so easy to be proud of. I mean, in our last game against Millwall, we were down to 10 men after 5 minutes, after a shocking tackle by one of our debutants. So we're down to 10 men after 5 minutes at the Den, which is historically a very difficult place to go. Millwall took the lead in the second half, and we somehow came back to score two fantastic goals to win the game. And that was after Leroy Fair had gone off injured and Martin Olsen too. We had Kyle Norton playing as a central midfielder. To put that into context, Kyle Norton isn't very good at his own natural position. To put him in at central midfield was asking for trouble, and he came up with a stunning goal out of nowhere. And then Jefferson Montero came on, who's really made a name for himself now as an impact sub off the bench, and set up Ollie McBurney for the winner. And it's just a joy to watch the Swans this season. We're not going to win every game. I think with such a thin squad as well, when we really get into the thick of the season and injuries start biting and players struggle to keep fit, I think we're going to see a downturn in form. I don't see us challenging for promotion back to the Premier League this season, but the early signs are that we are undoubtedly heading in the right direction. And I just hope that the people upstairs do not do anything to upset Graham Potter, because he's got something special about him. There is no doubt about that. And we need to be doing everything that we can to keep him happy.
Yeah, and I'm sure, as you said, it's just great to see good football played by Swansea again, considering that was very much the brand when you came up to the Premier League, is you played very tidy stuff. And unfortunately, that had gone from you alongside the results. Well, Gitto, an absolute pleasure having you back on. Why don't you tell the folks where they can find you or anything you're working on?
Yeah, thanks for having me back on. Really enjoyed it. The Jackcast is away for this week, but we should be back next week after our game against Nottingham Forest if you want to hear more about how the Swans are doing. You can also read my work in my new weekly column on Wales Online and in the South Wales Evening Post, which has taken over from my column at the Carmarthen Journal. So you can read that online now every single week.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Gitto. It was great speaking with you and catching up. And best of luck to both Swansea and Wales throughout the season.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a hacer tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.